on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 93-year-old Augie Palercio of Fresno, California. In fact, if you find yourself on North Garfield Avenue, just west of Freeway 99 in Fresno, you might happen upon his produce stand, where he sells vegetables and fresh eggs on the honor system. If he's not there, you just leave your money in the box. He'll take your word for it. If he is there, he might even sell you one of his hundreds of chickens. But it's pretty amazing that he ever made it back from World War II, especially considering the story he was telling when we left off. No doubt we've cruised along through some pretty incredible things. It was really rare for an enlisted man to become a naval pilot, and for Augie to go from a machine gunner on the ground battling the Japanese with the 1st Marine Division on Guadalcanal to an aerial gunner with the 1st Marine Air Wing to a pilot of an SBD dive bomber, and he wasn't even done yet. But that was all a rare and incredible accomplishment. And he was telling us about the day in November of 1943 when the SBD he was flying for Marine Scout Bomber Squadron 144 was shot down, killing the rear-facing gunner in the back seat, a teenager from Oklahoma named Harold Riddle. This is in the Solomon Islands. You guys had been dive bombing Bougainville. And where was it that you went down?
Oh, the location that was in between Munda Airfield and off to the right across the bay. It was in that bay right there where I went down in, right off the end of the airstrip. I couldn't get it back to the strip. I was trying to make the strip again. Right. I didn't have much control, but I did have a little bit. And that's where, when I hit the water in that SBD now, I hit pretty hard because I didn't have much control. And while I was trying to get the gunner out, I had my left leg jammed in there some way. And after all the pulling and pushing I could do and the cussing I could do, I finally got the leg out, but the water was in the cockpit by then. And, of course, the airplane kept going down as the I finally got up on the wing and was trying to get the gunner out. But if I could have, I couldn't have saved him anyway.
Did you think you were going to die right there?
Did I think I was going to die? Sure, I gave up. When I was in the water waiting, that's why I didn't see the two divers diving over the side. They told me that, and I know two things grabbed a hold of me, because one was up around my neck and one was down my belt, where my belt normally would be.
I'm just trying to imagine what that felt like for you, because you're a young man. You're halfway around the world from your family. You just lost this teenager who was in your gunner seat, and now you're about to die. What kinds of things were you thinking about? What was going through your mind?
Well, as I started to say a little while ago, I had two brothers and three sisters, and I didn't want the brothers getting in the war. And I did what I had to do. But then the one, Pete, he had lung problems, so he was 4F, and Mikey served in China.
You described some pretty amazing circumstances that you survived, that it's pretty incredible that you survived. And you even said it's hard for you to believe yourself. Do you feel like somebody or someone was protecting you, that there was some kind of divine intervention there?
I've always felt somebody was protecting me. Somebody had to be protecting me. Who else could have helped me when I was practically dead in the water after, say, three and a half hours of treading water? Who made that man up in that PBY see me? It's impossible. Because you have these white caps, and you're making white caps. For some reason or other, he must have had his eye just spotted long enough on me that, and once he saw me, you don't take your eye off of me. You can't. All you do is yell to your partner and try to get him to see the same thing. That's the same as in flying. When a Japanese plane is up above you, up in the sky, in the sun probably, you can't see them. Pretty soon you see a shadow. And you may see them, but your wingman won't see them. And sometimes he sees them and you don't.
Well, I hear you. Needle in a haystack, I guess, would be an apt analogy. And I think I've heard flea on an elephant from a sailor or two. It really is remarkable that everything happened just the way it did for you to survive that. And I know that that's just the tip of the iceberg. I'm sure you had to recover from that for a little while, but what happened next?
One of the first things I did after I got back on my feet was put in for a transfer to fighters. The CO didn't want me to do that. He said, "You're too good a dive bomber." "No, I'm not. I if you want me to stay as a dive bomber, I want you to take that gunner out of there. I'll go by myself. I don't want the death of another man on my shoulders. Because I'm supposed to protect that poor kid. He couldn't have been born 17. To him, I was an old man already." He said, "You can't do that. You have to use a gunner, that it will just ground you." I said, "Well, give me the gunner. I don't want to get grounded." So anyway, as life went along, the fighters come into Guadalcanal, and they were operating off of the canal. And pretty soon, they were short of pilots. Boy, that was the answer to my dreams. The CO didn't want me to go. He wanted me to stay where I was in a dive bomber. No, I'm going to be a fighter. So anyway, he just about had to okay my transfer, so I got into the fighters. Life went on. We're flying sometimes 2-3 times a day, because most people don't know this. We were beat to death before we ever got started. Why? We're not eating Japanese rice for breakfast. It's because a bunch of kids. That's all we were. Not very smart. Well, the fighter life went along just fine. Sub patrols were simple. I got paired up with a wingman, McMasters. His picture's right up over there, and he's supposed to be my wingman. You never flew by yourself. He always had a wingman. And his primary job was to keep the Japs off of my tail while I was trying to run in on the target. The fighters always went in first. Their primary job was to stop the small arms fire. And sometimes it was thick. One night we were sitting in the ready room, and the weather was bad. It was awful, awful. That Liberty ship that they converted to a carrier was rocking 2 and 3 ways all at the same time. The word come around over the PA system that they need a flight of 4 pilots to go out on a submarine hunt. Well, there happened to be 4 enlisted pilots in that squadron. I was one of them. They tell me I was the first one that jumped up and volunteered for it, and then the other 3 saw, and we went out. And that Olsen was mad. It was bad, awfully, awfully bad. On a carrier, you usually land up and you have a landing signal officer, the LSO. So you come up to the takeoff slot, and he's standing there listening to your engine and looking at the atmosphere around you. And all the while he's there, he's giving you this signal. That means your engine's not putting out. He wants more. I was one of those guys that always liked to keep an ace in the hole, so I'd always try to cheat. Keep a little bit for myself. I never could. And pretty soon, he gave up this year and gave me the go. While he's doing this, you're not looking anything. So as he went down with his hand, that meant for me to go. I glanced over to the left wing, and there was 4 sailors there trying to hold that airplane down. Then I finally looked up to the end of the under the flight deck. And there was 20 feet of water above that deck. I thought, "Augie, this is it. You'll never make it." So nothing to do but go. I had the power on. But by the time I went that 400 feet, the ship had come up and the water had gone down, and I made it. I get up in the air and look and see how my wingman's doing, how Mac was doing. And he was having the same problems. Evidently, he took out off and he made it. But that was one time I was sure I was all gone. There's no way that airplane was flying through that wall of water. But that LSO knew his job. And I was airborne just as I hit that end of that deck. I got the flaps up, gear up, everything up. Power was all the way on, so I didn't have to do anything with that. But we got joined up. Finally got the other three. Mac got off okay. And he and I, we had to circle the carrier a couple of times before number three man come up. And then another three or four times, then the fourth man came up. And so we went out looking for this submarine that's supposed to be alert, and it was too close to the carrier. That's why they sent us out. It was a wild night. Pretty soon I thought I saw it. I said, I signaled to Mac. I said, I've got it. Get in line. Come to find out it wasn't. It was just a dark spot on the ocean. Got back in formation. We were still looking for that submarine. Pretty soon Max signals, rocked his wings, got my attention, and he signaled that he saw it. So I went like this. That meant take over. So he took over and got there, and sure enough, there that thing, that submarine was on deck, not moving too fast. He must have been in trouble. So we reformed ourselves. I was leading it. Mac was number two. And I said, I signaled to Mac that I'm going in first. You bring the flight in if I make it. I made it. But all 650s were going full blast. And it was just a very little small arms fire. There was one anti-aircraft gun going, but I got it silenced pretty fast. And I finally dropped my depth charge. And of course, you never know whether you hit or miss. Or if you're missing a mile, you know you did. When they come back, we were talking among ourselves. You got a hit, Augie. You got a hit. You got a good hit. Of course, the air around that sub lighted up with the fire that was burning. So the other three guys, Mac and the other section, two more planes, they made runs on it, dropping their depth charges. And by then we were out of fuel, so we had to find that carrier. We finally found it, and as soon as we parked the airplanes, when we got out, we all ran up to the officer's deck, the OD, and we begged him to let us go out again. He wouldn't do it. No way. That carrier, that sub's gonna go down. You guys don't have to go back. And of course, we tried to convince him that we should. And we had no problems. We could find it. Give us a torpedo instead of anything else, and we'll. He wouldn't do it. So anyway, from what I understand, that submarine did go down. After that, the life just went along kind of dull, patrolling for those days, and just to kill them or get killed. The everyday ones, you don't even pay much attention to them. You live it, you get paid, you live it, and that's it. But this time it was Teague. So Teague and I were out, supposed to be flying test hops. I was supposed to be the test pilot, but I had two airplanes to test, so Teague was my buddy, and so I let him take the other one. And we go out, and sure enough, we're about 100 miles away from the carrier, a good 100 miles. And I spotted the flight a little bit below us. We were playing around about 11,000 feet. And this flight of six bombers, Japanese Bettys, were cruising along, and they had a flight of seven fighters with them. So I signaled to Teague, I said, we're going to attack. That meant gave him two messages. One was we're going to attack. The second one was that he's supposed to go on his own. He's supposed to forget about me. He's supposed to go on his own. And of course, if you wanted to reject the call, you signaled like that. And that's what he was doing. No, when we got back, Foggy, you were crazy. Those airplanes, there were seven or eight, just the two of us. We're better pilots than all of them. So we made our first run. Of course, he was moved off to the side because he picked his target, and I had mine. I had the Betty lined up for me. So I wanted all the speed I could get. So we flew just about where we were on top of them. Those pilots were asleep. They didn't even know we were in the sky. So when I got into the position that I wanted, all I had to do was roll over on my back, pull the nose down, and I was going straight down, picking up all the speed I could get a hold of. And I hit that Betty like shooting a dove. All 650s were going full blast.
Talk about an intense situation. I think the rest of us here are grabbing the edge of our seats. We can feel it too. And that's not the end of that encounter, but we do need to take a break. So we'll jump right back in midair in Augie Palacios' Corsair in the Pacific during World War II when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.